for hosting. Thank you to everybody for coming. There are outlines. If you didn't get back there, maybe let's pass them this way. So it's terrific to be together to learn on this topic. Let's pass these over here. Part of the reason why this is so remarkable and so terrific is because we're going to talk about two topics tonight that everybody here, I suspect, to some degree or another, is familiar with already. So you already do this, and you already know this. And so the reason why we're here is actually because we want to do more, and we want to know more. And that was the origin of this idea, which is about getting back to the basics of things that we're already doing, but to have a greater appreciation, greater understanding of them. Welcome. So the topics that we're going to tackle tonight are the beginning of Shabbos with Shabbos candles and the end of Shabbos with Havdalah. And the hope is that by the time we finish, we will have a greater insight and a greater appreciation for these two aspects of the mitzvos. And maybe we'll learn something new. But even if we don't learn something new, it's tremendous to me to look around and see that we really do want more in our Yiddishkeit and our Judaism. That's why we're here, because we want more. There should be a sign-in sheet floating around somewhere. Is there? Thank you, Tracy. It'll be coming around. You can catch it. We'll give you the folder and the pen for the same. Yeah, let's just put it with this so you have something to write on. Thank you. Okay. So let's start with Shabbos candles, Neros Shabbos, which, as the Rambam points out, is a mitzvah which is specifically oriented toward women who are connected to the bias to the home, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And we're going to talk about the concept of Neros in pairs, in four different pairs, and I'll explain what I mean. Let's start with the first pair, which appears, the beginning of this is in the Rambam in Perek Hey. The Rambam in Maimonides, when he describes the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles, he talks about something called Oneg Shabbos, which is a difficult term to translate. What's the best way to translate the word Oneg Shabbos? What would you say? Right, celebrating Shabbos, enjoying Shabbos. So having candles on the table or at the table or in the dining room, the Rambam says that Shabbos candles are not just something nice, they're a chovah, they're an obligation, and they are included in the principle of Oneg Shabbos. Then the Rambam writes, later on in Perek Hey, something unusual. He says, you know when the right time to light Shabbos candles is? Before Shabbos. When would you think you would light Shabbos candles, right? Obviously you're going to light Shabbos candles before Shabbos, because Shabbos candles, if lighting Shabbos candles is a violation of the Malach of Havara, that's obviously not acceptable. So why did the Rambam think that it's important to tell us that you light Shabbos candles before Shabbos? Then you fast forward to Perek Lamed, where the Rambam tells us that Shabbos candles are included in a different concept called Kavod Shabbos. Not the same thing as Oneg Shabbos. There's Kavod Shabbos and there's Oneg Shabbos. So which is it? Are Shabbos candles part of Oneg Shabbos, or are they part of Kavod Shabbos? So here we come to a fantastic insight of the Briska Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, Rav Velvel. He died in the 1950s. He was the uncle of the Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik. He was a towering rabbinic figure, and he has a commentary, kind of a Mipi HaShmua, a traditional commentary they say in his name, where he has the following insight. So when we light Shabbos candles, we can now have in mind this vort from the Briska Rav, who is an incredibly important rabbinic figure. The Briska Rav says, actually, it's not one or the other, it's both. Because he says, and this answers his question on the Rambam, he says, you know, what is Oneg Shabbos? Oneg Shabbos is an experience that we have on Shabbos, that there's a way to enjoy ourselves on Shabbos. We have more sheets. Let's take them past. Thanks, Lisa. So Oneg Shabbos is something that happens on Shabbos. So having a Shabbos Suda with candles is enjoyable. It's nice. Everybody likes that. So there's a Kiyam of Oneg Shabbos. But then there's another dimension, and that is what we call Kavod Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is the way that we prepare for Shabbos. It's the preparatory stage, and that happens before Shabbos. So you know why the Rambam has to tell you that you light candles before Shabbos? Because in a certain sense, you might have thought that you should light the candles, or the main aspect of the candles is on Shabbos. That's the Onik Shabbos component of the candles. So that's what Rizka Rav says. Rav Elbel says that's why the Rambam has to tell you, you light it before Shabbos. Obviously, but he's alluding to the fact that from this perspective, from the perspective of Onik Shabbos, the main fulfillment is on Shabbos. Then there's another dimension, and that is the kavod of Shabbos. The same way that when you have a very distinguished guest, when a guest comes who is a very important guest, the main thing is to prepare for that guest, to make sure that everything is mesudar. So the Rambam describes how the beds should be made before Shabbos, and the tables should be arranged nicely, and everything should be put away, and that you should light candles. That preparatory step. So this is the first aspect of Halakas Neir Shabbos that we can keep in mind, that it's what you'd call in Yiddish, Tzvei Dinim, two aspects. You get a double kiyum when you light Shabbos candles. There's the kiyum of Onik Shabbos, that you enjoy it when it's on Shabbos, and there's the preparatory step, there's the kiyum of Kavod Shabbos. So that's number one. But there's obviously, of course, there's so much more on a deeper level to appreciate when we talk about lighting Shabbos candles. So we light it for Onik and Kavod, but there is another dual perspective that comes to light in this magnificent work called Sidur Shel Shabbos. This work was written by a Hasidic master in the 19th century. His name is Reb Chaim of Chernovitz. Reb Chaim Chernovitzer authored this book, and it's all about the experience of Shabbos. Most of what it says in this book, I have no idea what it means, because it's super Kabbalistic. There's a lot of Zohar here, and there's a lot of things. I'm in the shallow end of the pool, and he's way in the deep. But there are some few things that even on this level, he also has a commentary on the Chumash called Be'er Mayim Chaim. So Chaim Chernovitzer has an idea that also reflects two dinim in Hadlakas Neiros. He says that when we light Shabbos candles, it accomplishes two things. Number one, he says, Mitzad ha'arasam, through the light that illuminates in the house with Shabbos candles, Yasir men habayis hara v'dagas yimei hachol. What we do when we light Shabbos candles is we illuminate the house with something that's warm, right? There's a warm glow that goes with the Shabbos candles, and it makes people feel relaxed and comfortable, and we take the worries and the stress and all of the issues of the week, and we just let it go. He says that's the first aspect of the Shabbos candles. When we light Shabbos candles, for those in this room who have that schus, that practice, the first thing is about lighting it up and driving away all the anxiety of the week, and therefore we have more or b'moshvosam laharbo simcha v'chedva or beso. That's the first. And then the second, v'apul hashnia, hu inyan prisas hasukas shalom ha'yada anas ha'neros. There is a feeling of tranquility that comes about through the lighting of the neiros. Now he's talking about it al pi Kabbalah, that there's a deep mystical idea of Poreis Sukkas Shalom, which is in the Friday night davening. But he says we do that every Friday night in our homes when we light Shabbos candles. A, we let go. The first thing is we let go of the things that were stressing us out during the week. But the second thing is after we go, you know, because I don't know what it's like. Sometimes in some people's houses, when it gets time for Shabbos candles, it's like a little bit, you know what I'm saying? A little bit. So the first thing is we have to take a deep breath before lighting Shabbos. Nobody can relate to that here at all, so it's a theoretical construct, especially when lich benching is like 357. You know. So the first thing he says is we have to use the light to take a deep breath and let go of the stress of the week. That's one din. But the second din, he says, when we bring in this or lahoy or panav, this creates this protective aura, this spiritual environment that we create in our homes. This two din. There's the first din, which is closing up the week and bringing happiness, because a lot of time there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of pressure. So, kol malach t'chasuyo, once Shabbos hits, that recipe, either it is or it isn't. You know? It's up to the Ribbono Shalom at this point. There's nothing you can do about it. Ein ma lasot. Ein ma lasot. So we feel that we let it go. We're at peace with what's going on. And then the second thing is we realize we introduce an element of shalom, a poreis sukkas shalom, to our homes. That's number two. So now we get to a third tzvei dinim, a third two aspects, which is why do we light the Shabbos candles? So, of course, we mentioned this deep idea of bringing light into our lives, which at the end of the day, isn't that so much what we're looking for? You know, we work a whole week, we're so busy, we're running, we're doing. How often is it that we have a chance to just take a break and say we want to bring some light into our lives? It's beautiful. But the Gemara actually identifies that there is a practical reason to light Shabbos candles. Two practical reasons that are developed in the Rishonim. The Gemara says that the reason why we light Shabbos candles is for the purpose of Shalom Bayis. That's the reason for lighting Shabbos candles. So Rashi says, why do you have to have Shabbos candles for Shalom Bayis? He says, you know what it is? It's annoying to sit in the dark and eat. It's not... Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to have a ton of light in the dining room. It could also be, you know, modest. It could be, you might like it very bright. I noticed different kinds of weddings, they have different tzuras about this. Some wedding, it's not like finster black in Yiddish. It's not totally dark, but I find it is troublesome when I go to a wedding and I can't tell if I'm having the fish or the chicken. So that's not as geschmack. And especially it's Minute Chicago, I have to make fun of this because I can't help myself. You have to tell people, when I go to a dinner, you have to tell them 6 months in advance. I don't know 6 months in advance whether I want chicken or fish, but that's, you know what I'm saying? And then you get there and it's so dark you can't see. So there's a Shalom Bayis element of, you want to be able to see what's there, you know? You want to be able to see what it is. So that's what Rashi says. He says, it's b'nei adam mitztarin leishev b'choshech. People don't like to sit and eat in the dark. It's not enjoyable. So that's one element of Shalom Bayis. But the other element, the other Rishonim say, you know why it is? Is so that people shouldn't trip on things. Especially in certain houses where you have Lego pieces and cars and people leave their socks and various things all over the place. So other Rishonim say, you know why you need to have a light on? Because if you don't have a light, people are going to trip. They're going to end up falling and hurting themselves. The nafka mina of these two reasons is that, yes, primarily we like to keep the Shabbos candles either on the dining room table or in the dining room somewhere where you're going to eat, because that's the first reason it's enjoyable to eat at candlelight. But according to the second reason, you also fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos when you leave a light on in the bathroom, when you leave a light on in the hallway. Anywhere where you're going to be going, you should leave a light on, and it's beautiful magic if you do that. You know, if you had the extra 45 seconds and the headspace on Erev Shabbos, we realize that this is also part of the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos, because now you have a light that people are not going to trip when they go to the bathroom or they walk down the hallway. So these are, again, two dinim in Neir Shabbos. One is mitzvah the eating, which is why lechatchila, the most important Hadlakas Neir is in the dining room. That's where people usually put their candles. But there's also an added in you to make sure that you light lights in other places in the room. How many Shabbos candles do we light? So there is another tzvei dinim here, another two. And that is that your general practice is to light two Shabbos candles. One, echad keneged zachar, ve'echad keneged shamar. So usually the practice is to light at least two Shabbos candles. In some places they light seven, some women light ten, some women light according to the number of members of their household. Bidyeved, one is okay. One is the bare minimum. And many posts can point out that the practice of lighting, let's say in our house, Baruch Hashem, we have seven family members, so we have seven Shabbos candles on Friday night, but that's only when you're home. Posts can point out that when you're on the road, you can light two Shabbos candles, and that doesn't affect the minhag that you have when you're home. Questions, comments, or observations on piece number one? Yes?
At what point did
they
start accepting lighting candles?
Oh, great segue. Perfect. Just issue number two. Perfect. So we can go on from number one. Any other questions, comments, observations on the pairs? Okay. So when is the time to light Shabbos candles?
Well, like in history.
Already the Gemara tells you that there is an obligation to light Shabbos candles. It appears as a fulfillment of Divrei Nevi'im, so we don't know exactly precisely, but you're talking about thousands of years. There was a debate in the times of the Balei HaTosfos in the 3rd century between Rabbeinu Tam and other of the French Tosfos whether you recite a bracha. Our practice is everybody, I don't know anybody who doesn't recite a bracha. That debate was solved 900 years ago. If anybody doesn't follow the Rabbeinu Tam, we should talk about it afterwards. The minhag is to make a bracha when you light Shabbos candles. So the bracha was a debate, but the practice is very long-standing from the times of the Talmud in the 3rd century. Okay, so when do you light Shabbos candles? So here is another thing that we've been doing for a long time. We don't necessarily think about why it is that we're doing where it is. So now we know where it comes from. Well, let's start like this. When's the earliest time to light Shabbos candles? Anybody know when the earliest time to light Shabbos candles is? So it's something called Plag HaMincha. Well, what is Plag HaMincha? Half Mincha. Half Mincha? Any takers? Half Mincha, very bizarre phrase. So it goes like this. Imagine, let's take a day that has an exact 12 hours. I think it's called the equinox. So you have 6 o'clock sunrise, 6 o'clock sunset. Neitz to Shkia, sunrise to sunset. So halakhically, we divide the daytime into 12 hours. So from 6 to 6, it's going to be 12 hours. Great. There is something called Mincha Gedola. Mincha Gedola is the big time for davening Mincha, the earliest time for davening Mincha, when we're paralleling the Karban Tamid Shel Bein HaRabayim, the afternoon sacrifice that was brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, when do you bring the afternoon sacrifice? In the
afternoon.
Bingo! So when does the afternoon start? So the Gemara has it. It's kind of a little bit not so clear whether it starts at 12:01, or we assume, halacha l'maaseh, it starts at 12:30. So on a day when you have a perfect day, halachic hours, sunrise at 6, sunset at 6, so 12:30 is the earliest time to daven mincha, that's called mincha gedola. But on the average day, the Mishnah says in Psachim, the average day, you know when they were bringing the Karban Tamid Shel Bein HaRabayim? 8.5 hours into the day. So that would be, if you have 2:30 in the afternoon, that's what we call mincha ketana, the smaller time, the smaller window. So it's going to be from 2:30 in the afternoon until the evening. However, I didn't say it exactly correctly, because that is just the beginning of the offering of the karban. It would finish, it would take an hour, finish at 9.5 hours. Okay? So at the end, at 9.5 hours, that's going to be Mincha Ketana. How much time do you have left in the day from Mincha Ketana, the end of your sacrifice, until sunset? How much time is left?
2.5 hours,
exactly. So plug half of that 2.5 hours, that is the earliest time to light candles. That is what Plag HaMincha is. It's half the time between Mincha Ketana, the 2.5 hour mark, the end of when they offer the Tamid Shel Bein HaRabayim, until sunset. Why is that? Because now you can already say it's the beginning of the evening. So oftentimes in halacha, when something has to be done at night, you can back it up potentially already to Plag HaMincha. So this is going to come up in the laws of Sfira Saomer. It's going to come up in the laws of Kriyas HaMegillah. A lot of things that need to be done at night. Well, if it's already after Plag HaMincha, you're already halfway beyond the end of the day, because you're already halfway beyond the half mincha. So that's why you're going to be able to light Shabbos candles. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? It actually makes a lot of sense. It's just, we never thought about it. So that's why when somebody asks you, when is the earliest time for mincha, it's going to depend what time of year it is. Because now, this week, Neitz is late. Neitz is somewhere around 7:15. And Shkia is early. So you're going to take that block of time, divide it into 12, and then that 1/12 plus 1/4, back that up, that's going to be Plag HaMincha. The other option is MyZmanim.com. They do the math for you. Right? That's much easier. But that's the earliest. MyZmanim.com. I love those guys. They are the best. So that's when the earliest time is for lich benching. After that, you can light all the way until what we call lich benching. Why is lich benching when it is? I think I'm a little confused. Since I moved here, I still can't get it straight, because some people light here 18 minutes before and some people light 20 minutes before.
Chicago lights 20 minutes before. That's
is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Like, in Skokie, do we light 20 minutes? I don't know.
So West Park Chicago always lights 20 minutes
20 minutes before. What about Skokie?
Lights 20 minutes before.
So what does the Shul Bulletin say?
I mean, it says the time, but I don't know.
18 or 20. Well, we should check based on Shkia.
We've got a study.
Yes?
For Torah is 20 minutes.
Okay.
KCT is 18 minutes.
That's okay, there you have it.
My husband was going to talk to them, and they said they need to get onto Chicago.
Because in Chicago, we have to do what was always done in Chicago. That's the minute.
Been in Chicago.
That's right. That's what we got to do. So, I don't know. We have to ask our Rabbi Leitag what the... So anyway, why do we do this? Why do we do this? We do. Why? Why are we lighting 18 minutes or 20 minutes? Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, it's 40 minutes because there's something called Tosefes Shabbos, the addition of Shabbos. And this is a special mitzvah. It's a debate among the Rishonim. Is it mitzvah d'oraisa or is it mitzvah d'rabbanon? But it's a very important thing to do. Minimum, Shabbat minimum, we should definitely do at least 2 minutes of Tosefes Shabbos, of adding to Shabbos. So it's a good idea to light 18 minutes because that, or 20 minutes or 40 minutes, because that gives you the addition. You know, the Rambam says the Ikar Tosefes Shabbos is on Yom Kippur, but many Rishonim say that every Shabbos you have a special mitzvah. What is the significance of this mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos? It means that we understand that we are appreciating and embracing the sanctity, the Kedushas Hayom, and carrying that just a little bit into the weekday experience. And we do that on the front end and on the back end. There's a Tosefes on the beginning and a Tosefes on the end. So again, the minimum of you should do at least 2 minutes. If you're running really late, you should make sure to at least, now, b'di'evid, you got to light before Shkia. Shkia is it, that's sundown. Nothing to talk about after that. But the idea of Tosefes Shabbos is very powerful. Because what it says is that we have the ability to bring more Kedusha into our lives. Yes, there is a set, fixed amount of Kedusha. The Rebbe Shlomo puts that in right at the beginning of Shkia. But we have the ability to add more. Now we can understand with all of this where early Shabbos comes in. Right? Otherwise, what is early Shabbos? How did that come about? The answer is you can start Shabbos as early as Plag. So in the summertime, let's say in Chicago, the summertime, the Shkia could be very late, could be after 8 o'clock. But because the day is very long, Plag is going to be over an hour, well over an hour, 2 hours plus before Shabbos starts. So you could start Shabbos 2+ hours before, all the way backed up until Plag.
Can you have the minion before you actually...
Perfect segue, exactly. So here is the question. Lisa's pointing out that this is like the million-dollar question.
The minion, and then it says, but don't light candles before.
Okay, perfect. So in the times of Chazal, and already, also in Europe it was like this, and in some places in Wisconsin, let's say, for example, or other locales, where they only had one community with one shul, and, you know, 15 balabatim in the shul, that was it. Whenever they decided to make Shabbos, that was it. You didn't have a choice. If the whole community decided they were making early Shabbos at 6:15, you had to make early Shabbos at 6:15 because there was one Sibur and the minority must follow what the majority says. So whatever was the practice in that community, in that city, there's only one minyan, that's what you have to observe. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says, well, what about in our communities today? Here, we have multiple shuls with multiple minyanim. So then Rav Moshe says, that doesn't apply anymore because you can't say that I'm in the minority and you're in the majority. It depends what minyan you're in and depends what minyan you want to go to on any given Shabbos. And then Rav Moshe takes it further. He says, and this is something that comes up in our house, let's say you have a family and the family decides they're going to make early Shabbos and the wife is going to light the Shabbos candles, as is generally the practice. The husband's going to go to shul, but the wife says, we're not ready over here. Not ready. So Moshe has a chiddush, and he says, look, if it's a family minhag, then if it's the husband's minhag to always make early Shabbos, out's a minhag, then the wife has to follow the minhag of the husband, like with other things. If the husband has a certain minhag, so the wife adopts the minhag. But if it's not a halachic minhag. It's just because they don't want to be falling asleep in the soup at 8 o'clock at night. But let's say they're running late 1 week, so they daven late, or they daven at 7 o'clock, whenever it is. So Moshe writes in a tshuva, he says, in that case, the wife who's lighting at home is not Me'ikar Adin bound to light Shabbos candles when the husband davens in shul and says Mizmer Shir or Baruch Hu and accept Shabbos. So it will happen, let's say, on Arcadia, when I will leave the house, and apparently there's a practice when I'm not there, that the rule is that the Shabbos candles have to be lit before I walk in the door. So that's the minig in our house, whatever that time is, whenever the executive board is ready to light the Shabbos candles. So we'll come back to that.
No,
you can't do Mariv before Plag.
Right.
So usually the proper thing to do is to daven, and this is what they'll announce in the shul, to do mincha right before Plag, because you want to say that it's daytime, and Maariv after Plag. There's one knach that you'll see in some shuls, which is interesting that in many places in Chicago, not like in other places in America, they're makbid about this in many shuls, to daven either at Plag or at Shkia. Because it's not so super lechatchila to daven at one time smack in the middle. Because what did we say about plag? Plag is already starting to move toward the evening. So if it's starting towards move towards evening, so you're davening mincha, you're telling me it's daytime. Then you're going to tell me you're davening Maariv. Well, how could you be davening mincha and Maariv in the same time zone between plag and shkia? So growing up, we always daven 7 o'clock Friday night. But that's not the super duper lechatchila, because 7 o'clock, sometimes you're davening mincha at 7 and Maariv at 7:15, and they're both in the plag to shkia zone. So that's not so lechatchila. That's why in many shuls in Chicago, I noticed that many shuls are machmir to either daven early, or we call it early or late. Early, like the plag zman, or bizman, the later time. So that's the story. So if you're in a place where there's only one shul and one everything, then you don't have a choice. You have to go with them. And everybody has to follow them. But if we're in a bigger community where you have multiple shuls, everybody can choose what they want. And the fact that the husband goes to shul, the wife doesn't have to light until the proper lighting time. Any questions, comments, or observations more about the when? Yes.
Right, so we've always had a debate in our house.
And I'm not going to take sides.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
You lit at Plag HaMincha.
Yes.
You lit at the regular time, but you didn't light any time in between.
Okay.
One time or the other, and I know there was a shear in Chicago. I don't know if Chicago Torah and Chesed had a shear, and there was all this big discussion in terms of if you could light any time up to the regular time. It sounds like you have your own minhag in your house, and I don't know what other people do in theirs. It's always been a point of discussion in our house in terms of when
yeah,
to light.
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Just two other notes on this point before we move on, in terms of the early Shabbos story. It's good to know, because this happens on occasion, that if you accept Shabbos early, that's only pertinent to you. But if your next door neighbor has not yet accepted Shabbos, even if that person is Jewish, you can ask them to do a malacha for you. So it happened on occasion when we lived on Sleeping Bear. We used to occasionally on Friday night, for some reason, whatever, the alarm went off once or twice. So Oscar, who lives across the street, they always daven late. So the minig was, if something needed to be done in the house, so you run across the street and ask Oscar, and he'll come and he'll be your Shabbos, Jewish, non-Jewish, whatever. Because Me'ikra Din, it's not Shabbos, so there's nothing non-Shabbos about, this is a Tshuva Sarajba, there's nothing non-Shabbos about asking him. What about if you lit and it's still Bein HaShmashos, it's still only 10, 15 minutes after candlelighting, then you can ask a non-Jew. Obviously, you can't ask a Jew. It's already after Shkia. It's after sundown. But until Ben Hashmashes, you can ask somebody who's not Jewish to help you. Okay, how do you light? That's why I'm here.
If you light, and before you light, you say, like, I mean, you could do it, like, let's say, you didn't daven and then daven after. So what if you said, between now, like, if you're davening, lighting early, between now and when you can't light anymore, if I need to turn on a light or something, I'm not accepting.
Ah, perfect segue. This is like set up tonight. Perfect segue to the next point, which is how to light candles.
Not
which
that I ever light early. I'm just
okay, good. I'm not judging. I'm not here to judge anyone. I could barely make it from breakfast to lunch. You know, I'm not judging anybody else. So here, the question that you're raising gets to an aspect of the Hadlakas Neira story that will lead us to your point, which is, everybody watch carefully, this part of the candle lighting. I'm not usually home, but I'm imagining it goes something like this, right? Some people do this. Some people do this. You've seen this. People do this. I should not make jokes about it. I should not make fun of it because it's an important thing. Why on earth are people doing that? For goodness sake, what is that all about? So there actually is a very good reason that dates back 400 years why everybody's doing this on Friday night. Because the question is, and this is going to get a long answer to Yudit's point, the Rambam says, you know how to light Shabbos candles? Make a bracha and light the candles and you're done. That's it. And that fits with every other. What's that?
Light the candles first.
Make the bracha, light the candles, and you're done. That's what the Rambam says. And that makes perfect sense, like every other mitzvah in the world. It's called over la'asiyasan, before it's done. You make the bracha, you do the mitzvah, v'zeu. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes this opinion, and he says, v'yesh cholkin. Says, not everybody agrees to that. Why not? Because some Rishonim say, no. If you make the bracha already, you are... What's that?
It's Shabbos.
Bingo! You're a Makabel Shabbos. So if you accepted upon yourself the observance of Shabbos, how can you now go and light Shabbos candles? So the Ramah... Rav Moshe Issel is from Krakow. Not somebody who just made this up last week. The Ramah says the practice is to cover up, either to cover your eyes or to cover the candles, so that you should not benefit and enjoy the light of the candles. And thereby, you light the candles first, not yet accepting Shabbos. Then you say the bracha and accept Shabbos. And then after you bracha, you take away your hands, and now you enjoy the light of Shabbos. So in that respect, it's over la'asiyasan. The bracha came before you enjoyed the light. So that's why you'll see some people, they put their hands in front of the lights, and some people, they put their hands in front of their eyes. Now this comes to your point, which is, that the assumption is that if you recite the bracha of L'Hadlik Ner Shel Shabbos, you are Mekabel Shabbos. However, if you make a Tanai, if you make a condition, you can then suspend the acceptance of Shabbos.
But only if you light early.
Yes. If you're lighting before Shkia, then you have to light. But you can make a Tanai, and the Aruch HaShulchan quotes from earlier Poskim that this is true even if you have it in your heart. You don't verbalize it. It's okay also if you have it in mind that you say, I'm going to light Shabbos candles now, but I'm not accepting Shabbos until afterwards. And this is what many people do. This also gets into the issue of the match. So what do you do with the match? So the best thing probably would be to do is to light the candles, put out the match, and then say the bracha. But it's okay if you put out if you light the candles and you say the bracha and you still have the match, you can have in mind when you say the bracha that you're not going to accept Shabbos until after you put out the match. Because putting out the match is a violation of the melacha of kibbuy. The one super duper important thing to keep in mind, I'll get you in 1 second, is that this does not work for one thing. It doesn't work for Shehecheyanu. So this comes up a lot of times on Leil Kol Nidre. For women who recite bracha of Shehecheyanu at home and then want to go to shul, there's no Tanai. So if you said Shehecheyanu at night and Yom Kippur, you can't drive to shul after that. So maybe you say Shehecheyanu in shul if you're going to daven in shul. But otherwise, same thing on Yontif. You're going to say Shehecheyanu on Yontif. Once you say Shehecheyanu, it's Yontif. But if you're not saying Shehecheyanu, then you can make it Tanai, a condition. Now, if you're a Sephardic, so the standard Pesach in the Shulchan Aruch, I assume that most Sephardic women, I don't know what the halacha l'mais is, but I assume that most Sephardic women, they say the bracha first, and they follow the Rambam, what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. But I think most Ashkenazi women follow what it says in the Rambam. So first, the Ashkenazi women, they light the candles, then they cover their eyes or they cover the candles, and then they say the bracha, and then they enjoy the light that fills the house. Yes, question.
How much time do you have to have, if you light the candles, is there like a certain amount of time that you have to say the bracha? Because what happens if you light the candle and you're like, oh man, I've got to turn on the light, or I've got to do this, or I've got to do that?
It's an interesting question. How long do you have before you make the bracha? So, assumably, you should do it right away, because we're worried about the... You know, we're trying to catch it on both ends. L'chatchila, you should really recite the bracha beforehand. So, I don't know. I would have to check. I'm curious what the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa would say about that. Can you make a hefsik? I don't know offhand. I would have to look it up. But l'chatchila should obviously be done right away. I would think that the best thing would be to do is to have kavana, not to be mekabel Shabbos, to make your bracha right away, and then go, you know, deal with whatever's flying. That it's an emergency.
You could always make it tonight.
That's what I'm saying. That probably would be l'chatchila. I don't remember coming across that case in the Shemir Shabbos. Yes.
So I have a minsa of when I light, I cover my eyes, I say the bracha, and then I say other things to Hashem.
Great. We're going to get to those things. I'm not going to ask you what you say because
no,
that's personal.
I just didn't know.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm supposed to say them first and then say.
No, it's good. We'll get to it in a second. No, it's good. Okay. It's good. We're on the same schedule. Any other points?
Like,
So you were saying that you can make it tonight. So, like, you know, you're driving to Shul afterwards or you're driving something, then say, you know, I'm lighting candles, I'm not accepting Shabbos till then.
Right.
But, and I think this may be what you had asked also, but let's say you light candles and you're not making a condition, but then you realize, like, oh, I forgot to shut the oven. But you lit candles early, but if you already made the bracha, then it's already Shabbos.
Right. If you made the bracha without a condition,
right.
So then it's already Shabbos.
You should always make the condition.
So that's what I was going to say. The one thing you might want to do is, like, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, say, every time I'm going to make early Shabbos this year, you know, it's like a kol nidre in advance. So
to make the condition every Shabbos.
So, lechatchila, you know, it's a good question, the postgame. You could probably, I wonder if you could probably make the case that if you always make a condition, so maybe you could say there's a working assumption that that's a condition, but really you should make a condition every time. Again, you don't have to verbalize, you just have to think, I'm about to light the candles, I'm about to make a bracha, but that roast, mamish, needs my help. You know, so I'm not accepting Shabbos until I can do some pikuach nefesh for what's going on in the oven. You know, so.
But you don't have to. It doesn't have to be specific. It just means
right.
If something comes up.
Yes, if anything comes up, don't worry. I'm not mekabel Shabbos until what's that? That's
the bathroom light.
The bathroom light. All right. That's also important. The bathroom light and cutting the toilet paper. Yes.
So say you make Shabbos early.
Yes.
And you did not make it tonight.
Yes.
But
somebody else.
You realize after like the bathroom light or something. When you're accepting it, then is it just assumed that the whole household, you know? Okay.
But not your husband who went to shul.
Right.
So
your kids,
right. Right. They're home. They're included with you.
Right. Okay.
But they get the guy next door or the woman across the street.
Right.
So if they didn't recite the candles and brach on the candles yet, they can come over and you know take care of whatever it is, as long as of course it's before Shkia. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Yeah.
I like the question of the match.
Yes.
You can shake it out after you light the candles with the
bracha? Yes.
Okay.
So the match. Best thing is to do is to blow it out or shake it out before you recite the bracha. And also, once you shake it out, put it somewhere. Because after the bracha, it's muktzah. It's garbage, so it's muktzah. So stick it somewhere and then make the bracha. That may be, you know, I'll be Kabbalah. Some people don't like to shake out, they don't blow out candles.
Right.
People have that minigam otsoi Shabbos, so maybe that's the origins of that. Yeah. All right, we're still here? It's going to be a long night. Sorry. Someone mentioned a few minutes ago the idea of tefillah. Before that, there is a beautiful note, the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, which is a very important work about the laws of Shabbos from the late Rav Neuwirth. He points out, he says, there's a minhag yafeh, there's a beautiful minhag to give tzedakah when it comes to the lighting of the Shabbos candles. So in many homes, they have a little pushka that you put next to the Shabbos candles, you put in 2 pennies, whatever it is. I think it really is such a beautiful minhag, because the idea of bringing the chesed and the or and the light into our lives, so what is more beautiful than sharing that with somebody else? That showing the Rebbe Shalom that we appreciate the fact that he puts light into our lives, so we're going to light up someone else's life. So you put in a quarter, you put in a penny. Oftentimes you keep a dish with some quarters in it or some dollars, whatever it is. That it's a minig yafeh. It's a beautiful minig to put in just a little bit of tzedakah. And that helps, I think, it addresses the whole idea of Hadlakas Neros as an experience. It's not just a mitzvah. It's an experience. And this relates to the tefillah. So it was one time, B'didenu Hava Uvda, I think it was one of these Friday nights in the summertime, and I came home, and the Vod was not ready. The Vod HaBayis was not was not holding. So it was the first time, I think, maybe the first time, I don't know when I ever heard Nechama light Shabbos candles, and it was amazing. I never saw lighting Shabbos candles, and if she was out of town, so I lit the Shabbos candles. What do men know about Shabbos candles? You man like Shabbos candles? You go, man don't know anything. So she stood there at the Shabbos candles with the younger children, and she said the bracha out loud with a sing-song, and then she spoke to the Ribbono Shel Olam in English about our grandparents and about all the Jewish people who needed refuah and taking care of everything, and Hashem should bless all the children. And it was amazing. When Chazal say that the mitzvah of Hadlakas Nerus is primarily on the woman, it makes perfect sense, because Chazal have this expression that Beiso Zu Ishto, that the woman of the house, she is the house, she is the bias, because the bias is the environment. So there are a lot of practical things that we do in life, a lot of mitzvahs masios, but then there's the avira. A bias is about an avira, it's a feeling, it's an experience. So the isha, the wife, the woman, she creates the environment. So if you have a whole experience, so the tzedakah becomes part of the experience, the lighting becomes part of the experience, the davening, the tefillah becomes the experience, that creates an avira in the house. It's not just a mitzvah that you check off. It's a whole feeling. Like Rav Soloveitchik writes about his mother, about what kind of feeling she gave in their home of Shabbos. His father taught him the laws of Shabbos, but his mother made Shabbos into a living entity. So I could see this one time. Usually I'm not home, but the one time I saw how it mamish created an avira, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is really there, that there is a God, and that we're bringing the light of Hashem into our homes. So all of these things, it's not just about checking the box, making sure it's bizman, and that you have enough, that it's lit long enough to last so that everybody gets home and you can enjoy the light, because if it goes out too early, you didn't enjoy it over Shabbos, you didn't bekayem the mitzvah. It's about creating an experience. It's about creating an avira. And that's why the tefillah is also a beautiful part of it. And the capacity for tefillah also makes a lot of sense. Because if what we're doing is we are lighting you, in this room, you're lighting these candles. It means you are lighting up the world with the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That light is very powerful. It's not just stam any light. Reb Chaim Chernovitzer says that this light of the Yom HaShishi, of the sixth day, we had a Yom HaShishi once before. That light of the Yom HaShishi that Adam and Chava had on the sixth day when they were created, before everything fell apart, that's what we call the Or HaGonuz, the hidden light. That's Or Zeruah LaTzadik. So Chaim Chernovitzer says, you know, the tzadik in that, in the merit of that tzadik, in that aspect of life, all the brachas, all the gates are open to us. So when a woman lights Shabbos candles, she's bringing in the Or Zeruah LaTzadik from the Or Agonos of Sheishas Mebrachos that was hidden away for the tzadikim. So when that light comes into the world, of course it's a beautiful time to daven. So I know some people, they have next to the leichter, they have a little tefillah, there's a special Yehi Ratzon. You don't have to say the special Yehi Ratzon, you could say any tefillah. You could say in English, you could say anything that's connecting us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a deep level. That's such a beautiful time to daven, and it fits with the whole idea that it's not just a mitzvah, it's an experience. It's bringing the warmth and the love and the whole avira, that's a deep level of shalom bias. It goes back to the Poris Sukkas Shalom. So that Or HaGonuz, that koach, that's very, very powerful. Yes?
So is there, the order would be that you'd say the bracha with your eyes covered, and you can say your tefillah. And then when you open your eyes, you've accepted
Shabbos. So that's a good question.
Because the tefillah is asking for things, and on Shabbos you don't ask for things. So I just
want
to make sure I'm doing
it right. So I'll tell you, I don't know the answer to that question. You have to take a poll of the women. There are many Nashim Tzidkonios in this room. I'm not going to point them out because they want to remain anonymous. But I'm curious. I don't know if women say the tefillah. I don't know because I'm not there. Do women say the tefillah when your eyes are covered or after you look at the lights? After? Kevin says after? After? What's the general? Eyes covered. Eyes covered. So I don't think you can go wrong here.
I think you can't go wrong. You're not supposed to ask for things.
Good question. So usually on Shabbos, we Shabbos himilizok, but I think this is a different bechina. It's a different aspect. So I don't know what I think the jury's out. I don't know what they do. You know, Jenna. After you uncover your eyes and you have the hanah from the nearest. So, oh, because you're also reading it. So yeah. Let's put it this way. I think you're in good hands, whatever your minig is. Okay, one last small point before we finish, why we do what we do. So we talked about why we light the candles in the first place, why we light them at the specific time that we do for Tosefta Shabbos or the earliest time of Plag. We talked about how we light them and why it makes sense that we should cover our eyes and the exact sequence of why that is. Just one more small point before we move on. We don't have time to cover all of the halachas of Hadlakas Neiros tonight because they're just very vast. But you know, I wanted to talk about one specific thing because it comes up on occasion and it's important to understand why. So what happens if you're in a place where you don't have candles or where they won't let you light with candles? So this comes up on occasion. The best place to light Shabbos candles is in your bayis, in your home, in your private space. Which means, let's say if you're in a hotel and you have a private room that you have for your family, so l'chatchila, the best place to light in a hotel is in your room. Most hotels, unless it's a residence inn where they have a fireplace, there you can light candles, Shabbos candles, Hanukkah candles, no problem. But a lot of places, this is an issue. So already at the end of the 19th century, they were dealing with, beginning of the 20th century, what's the status of electricity on Shabbos and in general in Halacha? And they made an observation. Just 1 second, I can't really see. Hold on. I'm not going to break this chair, Jenny, don't worry. Spoils. Yes, perfect. If you look carefully. Okay. So if you look carefully, you know what? No, it's hot. That's good. Men. That's the reason why we don't light Shabbos candles. These bulbs. Where's Jenny? Is she getting nervous over there? She can't see anyway. So if you look carefully at these bulbs. Joseph is not watching, so he's not going to do this. So if you look carefully, if you stand on a chair, which I'm not inviting you to do, these bulbs have a tiny little metal wire that runs across the top of them called a filament. These are incandescent bulbs. So already, 100 years ago, Reb Chaim Moshe Grzinski in Vilna, he says, look at that. Why is it illuminating? Because there's a current that's making this tiny little coil go red hot. There's so much energy in this coil that the red hot nature of this coil makes it illuminate. So that is Aish. How do I know that? Why does that make sense? Because the Gemara talks about something called a gacheles shel mateches, a red hot metal coal. So a gacheles, they didn't have incandescent light bulbs in the time of the Gemara, but they had metal. If you heat up metal till it's red hot, the Gemara says that's Aish. So Reb Chaim Moser says, if you have that, that's Aish mamish. Memela, you can light Shabbos candles by turning off and on the electric incandescent lights. So years ago, many years ago, that's not so many, when Chacham and I once went with our family to an RZC Shabbaton that Rav Schechter was going to be at. So I remember Rav Schechter was very into this idea that you should really light in your hotel room, you shouldn't light down in the lobby because it's not really your space. It's where you eat, but it's not really your private space. So we were driving down Tui, and I said to Nechama, oh my gosh, I forgot Shabbos candles. I don't know what they're going to have there. So we pulled over to the CVS, and in those days, they still sold night lights with incandescent bulbs. So we bought two. We got there. I found Rav Schechter's room. I knocked on the door because I had a feeling he probably didn't schlep it from Washington Heights. I said, Rebbe, I have something special for you. A nightlight from CVS. He was so excited because that's the way you could be mekayem the mitzvah. So with a bracha. With a bracha on incandescent light bulbs. LED lights, fluorescent lights. That's not so possible you can make a bracha on that. Why? Because it's not a gachel shel matekas. It's not ish. It's light, but it's not ish. So if you don't have, you don't have, you should do it. But I don't know. You'd have to ask a posik. I would not say that a person, I don't know what Rabbi Matangi says, I would not say that a person should make a bracha on lighting LED lights on Shabbos. But the old school, the incandescent bulbs, because they are ish, and then this gets into a broader discussion, which is l'chatchila, not everybody has time, but the Shemir Shabbos calls from Shlomo Zalman. You know, yes, we're going to make the bracha on the Shabbos candles, but l'chatchila, you know the best thing to do is first to turn off the lights, turn them on the covered Shabbos, and then light. Because you fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neiros Shabbos with all the lights. Remember, especially the bathroom lights, the hallway lights. So the best thing is take an extra 45 seconds, turn off the lights, turn them back on, or light the candles, turn them back on, and be Mekabel Shabbos that way. So, yes, Jessica.
Okay. One other question that comes up a lot is,
yeah.
when people are staying at somebody's house for a simple,
yeah,
and then it's always a question, you know, are they lighting candles where they're sleeping, or are they lighting candles where they're eating, and
So the Gemara says that there's a machlokas. Makom pita or makom lina. Does it go by the food or does it go by the house? Rav Shechter points out that that machlokas is really about what is considered more your personal place. But if you have a private space that's just yours and you're eating in a communal place, not all posts can agree with this, but Rav Shechter assumes that the best place then to light is in your own space, in your own apartment. Now, the other thing that you can do if you're an achsanoi, if you're a guest, you don't have to light Shabbos candles. You're staying with someone for Shabbos. You can give them a pruta, you give them a quarter, and you say, I'm going to be mitzvah if I'm going to join into your Shabbos candles. I think the minhag usually is that people light their own Shabbos candles, but you can either light it in your room with a nightlight or something like that. Now, of course, you have to be careful. It also goes for late Friday nights. Let's say you're going out for a Friday night meal. So, Aleph, you have to be careful to make sure that you light them in a safe place. And B, Beis, you should make sure that they stay on till the point where you can enjoy them. If you light Shabbos candles and then run out the door, you say, tonight I'm going to run out the door, I'm going to drive to somebody else's house for Shabbos, and then I'm going to come back home, the Shabbos candles are out. You didn't enjoy the Shabbos candles at all. So you should make sure to light the Shabbos candles that they're going to burn long enough so that when you get home, they're still burning so you can have a cup of tea or nosh on something from the fridge or just be in the kitchen or in the dining room so that you can enjoy them. So in terms of this point, so if you're going to be lighting in your room and then you're going to disappear, so then that's no good.
But also, basically, you're saying it's your personal space. Really, if you're just being put up in somebody's house and you're just there to sleep, but you're really there for the simcha, then your personal space would really be with the simcha.
Right. It's a tough call because it depends what that means. Your personal space. You know, if they're coming in and out, or if you really have your own separate area. So if you really have your own separate area, so many poskim would say light in your separate area in your home rather than in the place where you're eating. Well, others might say, look, I don't feel comfortable there. They're total strangers. I don't know them. I'm not really. I just happen to be sleeping. They're putting my stuff down there. I'm going to really light b'makom achila. I'm going to eat in this other house. So then I can hear why you would want to light in the place where you're going to eat. Yeah. Any other questions, comments, or observations? I'm glad I didn't try to tackle three topics because we can hold it here or we can do a few more minutes on Havdalah. I won't be insulted if anybody decides they've had enough already because we're at it.
I have one question.
Yes.
In the hospital, they give out little candles.
Yeah.
With a little imitation flame. Can you make a bracha on that? It sounds like.
What kind of light is it? So battery is okay. The Shemir Shabbos quotes there are even those who suggest that maybe battery is better because there's actually a source for the fuel. But I don't know what the light is in the hospital. Those things. What are they? Yeah. What do they have? What?
It's a battery.
But what kind of light do they have? What kind of bulb? Is it LED or incandescent? If it's incandescent, then go with it. Then. They're not. I guess it probably depends on which one it is. Okay. Havdalah. We just started Shabbos and we're ready to finish. Havdalah. We're still with it. All right. Havdalah. Through the experience of Shabbos, we grow and we come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we end Shabbos, we have the transition point of Havdalah. Halahavdil comes from a very deep place, and that is called Da'as. For those who daven Ma'ariv or Motzoi Shabbos, you make Havdalah in the bracha of Chonin Hadas. As the Gemara says, Im Ein Da'as, Havdalah Minayin. If you don't have Da'as, if you don't grasp an understanding of something, you can't create distinctions. You can't between Malta, between Kodesh and Chol, Yisrael or Amim, Sheish Yisimei Amaseh. This whole idea that we believe in Havdalah, in distinctions, is core to what it means to be Jewish. We understand that there are a lot of distinctions to be made in the world. Distinguishing between Kodesh and Chol is very important. And in this regard, the realm of Das is really fascinating. What does it mean that Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz HaDas? So Rav Kook has an incredible insight. He says, when you eat something, you totally identify with, becomes part of who you are, what you are. You ingest it. That's Das. Das means you're all in something. That's why when we refer to the physical intimacy between a husband and a wife, that's referred to as Das, Vayeda Adam, because the two people become totally enmeshed in each other. Chachma, that's wisdom. That's an analysis, a cerebral external measurement and understanding of something. Rav Kook says that when it comes to something which is kulo kodesh, that's totally holy, we use das, we're all in. But when we have something which is chol, something which is profane, it has redemptive elements, it has good things, but it also has things that are negative, we have to filter out. So for that, you don't want to use das, you want to use chachma. You want to use that kind of distinction. I didn't see yet, but there is a movie now out, I don't know if it's out on video, about the Eichmann capture. So they interviewed on the radio the actor who played Eichmann. What was his name? I don't remember his name. Kingsley, maybe?
Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. So he said something very interesting when they interviewed him. They said, what was it like to play Eichmann? He says, I didn't let him get anywhere near me. He was in the corner, and I was over here. And I had nothing to do with him. It was such an interesting ha'ara. That is what chachma is. Chachma is you have an idea, but you're careful about it. You take what you need and you leave what's not. Das is you're all in. So when we talk about havdalah, we talk about distinguishing between things that are kodesh, that we fully embrace with das, and then we talk about things that we're careful about, that we keep at an arm's length so we can navigate what's good about them and what's not. When we go into the week of chol, we have to be mavdil between kodesh and chol. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that chol is bad. We, in our community, at this table, we don't believe that chol is a disaster, it's negative. So I once heard a phenomenal pshat from Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Rav Lichtenstein once said, I think it was in the Y.U. Beis Medrash, she said this, it still stuck with me. He said, the Gemara says the end of Pesachim, something very odd. Three people get Olam Haba. Somebody makes Havdalah on Motzoi Shabbos, on wine. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, what's the big deal? Everybody makes Havdalah on wine on Saturday night. The Gemara says, you know what Rabbi Yochanan did? He left over wine from Friday night, from Kiddush, for Havdalah. So Rav Ari asked us, he said, what's great about that? What is the significance of leaving Friday night wine for Saturday night for Havdalah? So Rav Lichtenstein said, you know what the message here is? He says it's a message about the transition. Everybody knows that there is great anticipation and that there is great excitement and there is great spirituality when you transition from Friday to Shabbos. You bring in the light of Shabbos. What do we need to see, says Rabbi Yochanan? We need to see the same spiritual potential when we transition into Shabbos as when we transition out of Shabbos. Amazing. We need to see the potential in the Shesha Simei HaMaaseh as spiritual experiences the same way that we look at Friday night. Unbelievable. He says that's the Chab. The Chab is not just to be totally embracing Yiddishkeit on Shabbos. It's to be embracing Yiddishkeit during the week. So the same transition, obviously there's a step down from Shabbos, but the idea that when we transition during the week, it's a step up also. There's an opportunity to create a Kiddush Hashem. Such a beautiful concept. So when we go to the end of Shabbos and we make Havdalah, on the one hand, we are being mavdil, that we're now entering a new period that needs a different approach, but on the other hand, we're seeing what an opportunity to bring Kedusha into the weekday. So the experience of Havdalah includes a Bori Pri HaGofen, Bori Minei Besamim, and a Ner. So the Bori Pri HaGofen, why do you have a Bori Pri HaGofen and Havdalah? Me'ikar Adin, you can be Mekayim Havdalah during davening with Atachonin, with a special Atachon Antanu, or even Midaraisa, you can be Mekayim the Din of Havdalah by just saying Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol, where if you have to do an activity before you get to Havdalah, you have to say Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol. That's with words. So why do you need a cup? Because it's a significant occasion. And that's why you have to have a Kol Shel Bracha, just like Sheva Brachas, just like Kiddush. So you have a Kol Shel Bracha. If you don't have grape juice, so you don't have wine, you can use beer, or you can use some other chashva beverage, but you have to make it an occasion. This is a moment of transition, because we don't spend our whole week on Shabbos. So we need to orient ourselves. What are we going to do? That's number one. Number two, why do we have Besamim? because the Gemara says that there is an element on Shabbos of a neshama yisera. We have an element that is on a different spiritual plane, and we lose that when it comes to Motzoi Shabbos. And that's why you don't have the summon on Motzoi Shabbos when it enters Yantif, or Motzoi Yantif when it enters Chol HaMoed, because it's not a total letdown. And then finally, you have the Ner. Why do you have the Ner? Because on Motzoi Shabbos, the Or was originally created. So this is also a very profound idea, because originally the tradition was that it was the special Or HaGonos, the original light that burned from Friday morning all the way until Motzoi Shabbos, and then it started to get dark. And Adam and Chava, they had a panic attack. They said, the world is getting dark. We ruined everything with our sin. The Rebbe Shlomo said, don't worry. You know what you can do? Take two sticks, bang them together, two rocks, and you'll make light. Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh. That's what we re-experience every time on Motzoi Shabbos. Yom Kippur is a little different. You have something called a Ner Sheshavas, a Ner that was lit the whole Yom Kippur. That's a different halacha. On Yom Kippur, you should make sure to have the light from before. On Shabbos, it doesn't have to be lit from before. It just can't be lit from a goy on Shabbos. You light it straight Motzoi Shabbos. You're lighting the same light that Adam Rishon lit Motzoi Shabbos. The Medrash has a beautiful idea. That original hidden light, the Or HaGonos that we celebrate on Friday night, the Rebbe Shlom hid that. He hid it in the light of Torah Shebaal Peh, of learning. And the learning that we do of Torah Shebaal Peh is difficult. So it takes banging together those sticks or those flints. So the siman of Motzoi Shabbos of the Or that we light, we're lighting the candles. We have to invest in being Mekadosh Lechol. The Rebbe Shlom says, it's up to us. God says, you're going to have 6 days of the week. You're going to have to work hard and bring out the spirituality. He's not going to make the light for us. On Friday night, he lights it, so to speak. We do the hadlaka, but the light is coming from him. On Motzoi Shabbos, he says, we have to do it. That's going to be the goal of our week, to bang our heads and bang the stones and make sure that we are bringing out the light into the world. So now...
Okay.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
So with this candle, we're lighting it first and then saying, okay, why is that the case here? Shabbos is a different story, but...
So say it again?
Okay, so you were saying, like, there was a Rambam, I think, who says the bracha, light the candle.
Yes.
And so why do we not say the bracha and light the candle in this situation?
Why do we not say the...
Like when Shabbos is
open,
So it is a different bracha. This gets back to, this is an interesting question. Rav Avadya has a tshuva where he discusses this question: what is the nature of this bracha? Is it a birchas hananin that you're enjoying something, or is it more of a birchas hashevach, praiseworthy bracha that you're saying borei ma'ori ha'esh? But it does say in the Shulchan Aruch you're not supposed to say the bracha until ye'osu la'oro, until you're going to enjoy the light, and that's why Shulchan Aruch says, I don't know. This is deep Kabbalah, so I don't know what it is, but the practice of Shulchan Aruch says you're supposed to see the distinction from your fingernails on your palms, like this. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You're supposed to look at your fingers and see the distinction from the nails on your palms. So here, you make the bracha, and then you enjoy the light. So it's over la'as yasan.
It's not lahadlik.
Right, it's not lahadlik ner, it's mo'ori ha'esh. So the question is, what's the story with women and Havdalah? There is an interesting rumor, which we'll get to in a second. And if you want to see more about this, Rabbi Dr. Ari Zivitovsky, I think he's a doctor, Ari Zivitovsky has an article on Chakira, a lengthy article about this. I don't know how many people have heard this, but someone told me once that women don't drink from the coast of Havdalah. Why?
You'll grow a beard.
You'll grow a beard. And nobody would want that. If anybody, have you heard this? People have heard this.
Yeah.
It's a thing, I don't know. We'll have to explain where that comes from. So the simple answer for where that comes from, the simple answer, just al regalachas, where that comes from is probably the following. There's a Gemara. The Gemara has a discussion about what happens when people drink beer. The Gemara says, if you drink beer, your hair will grow. That's what the Gemara says, which I guess, you know, that's a thing, I guess. I don't know so much about beer because I don't drink beer, but I guess if you drink beer, the Gemara says, your hair will grow. I assume, R. Zivitovsky points out, in Europe, most people didn't have wine. They couldn't afford wine. So they had Chamar Medina. They had beer. It was cheap. So in Motzoi Shabbos, people were making Havdalah on beer. So the women said, I don't want anything to do with this beer, because the Gemara says that beer makes your hair grow. So that's why it became the association, right? I think...
My girls don't drink it. They would never drink it.
I can understand why. So we'll see. There is a reason. The Mishnah Berurah says that women don't drink the cup of Havdalah. We'll get there in a second. But that's just to dispel any rumors about beards. So just for clarity. All right. So here's the story. The Rambam says that Kiddush is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and Havdalah is a mitzvah d'oraisa. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Kiddush and Havdalah, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, they go together. Women are obligated in Kiddush because they're obligated in Malachos, so they're also obligated in Havdalah. Showing, that's it. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, but there are those who disagree. Because there are those who disagree with the Rambam, and they say that Havdalah is not d'oraisa. Only Kiddush is d'oraisa. And if Havdalah is not d'oraisa, well, wait a second. Havdalah, if it's an independent din, that's a time-bound halacha. So perhaps we could argue that women are not obligated in this because it's time-bound. The only reason they're obligated in Kiddush because it's connected to the whole experience of Shabbos, of the Malachos, which is not a mitzvah, it's an Iser. So perhaps women should not be obligated in Havdalah. So for this reason, the Rambam writes, it's better that women should hear Havdalah from a man because the men are for sure chayav in Havdalah, and the women, some have the opinion yes, some have the opinion no. And that also spills over to the same question about Borim Ma'ori Ha'esh. If Borim Ma'ori Ha'esh is part and parcel of Havdalah, so then maybe there's a good reason why a woman shouldn't recite the Borim Ma'ori Ha'esh if it's not a Birchas Hanenin, because then it's an excess bracha that she's not obligated in, then it shouldn't be said. So this creates a big balagan, and this might be one of the reasons why the Mishnah Berurah quotes that women don't drink the cup of Havdalah. You know why? Because if a woman is not obligated in Havdalah, well, the Borei Pri HaGafen comes at the beginning, and then there's a lot of stuff in between. And you know what we call that in Halacha? We call that a hefsek, an interruption. So some achronim say, you know why a woman doesn't drink Havdalah? It has nothing to do with beards and mustaches or beer or anything else. It has to do with the fact that if a woman hears the Borei Pri HaGafen, but she doesn't drink for 5 minutes, that's not right. That's a hefsek. And no one ever heard a woman say, I'm not going to be yotze with the Borei Pri HaGafen on the front end. I'm going to say Borei Pri HaGafen afterwards because the Borei Pri HaGafen is supposed to go first according to the sequence of the Gemara. So that's one of the real reasons why women, according to Mishnah Berurah, women don't drink from the cup of Havdalah because they're concerned about the hefsek between the Borei Pri HaGafen and the drinking. There's another reason that has to do with Kabbalah, that the wine comes from grapes and the grapes have to do with Chava, a whole, you know, Kabbalistic reason. But irrespective of all those things, what if there are no men? There's only women. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if there are no women, there are no women. There are no women, so the men make Havdalah, great. If there are no men, Shabbaton, just women. Woman's lighting alone, it's the Shabbos alone. So Shulchan Aruch says, a woman should recite Havdalah. Now the Shmir Shabbos says, he quotes many Achronim, he thinks that women should not recite Borim or Ori Ho'esh. But Rav Avadya has a tshuva on Yechavadas, where he thinks no. He thinks that women should recite the full Havdalah and Borim Ma'ori Ha'esh. So depending on what your minig is, if a woman is alone, she'll definitely recite Havdalah and Borim Ma'ori Besamim. The question is, what about Borim Ma'ori Ha'esh? So some would say no, and Rav Avadya says yes. Because if he's obligated, great question. The question was, why is the hefsek not an issue for the man? Because according to the Takanas Chazal, the man is obligated to make the brachos in a sequence. And therefore, it's considered one long sequence. It's not considered a hefsek. It's only a hefsek if you're not obligated. That's why it's an issue for the women. If you're obligated, according to the Rambam, the women are obligated in the standard sequence of Havdalah, so there's no hefsek for them either. It's only if you assume that a woman is not obligated, so the Borei Pri HaGafen, that's like every other Borei Pri HaGafen. Then she closes her ears for everything else, and she's gonna drink 4 minutes later. That's the hefsek problem. Yeah.
And if she's by herself, she still drinks.
Yes. Why? Because we're assuming. Right. Because we're assuming on that score that we're gonna, you know, make her a din. We're gonna follow the opinion that women are obligated. And therefore, it's just the Rambam says lefatchila. If there's a man who is obligated, then you don't have to get yourself into the suffix, and then you don't have to worry about that debate. But that's where it comes from, you know, because there's a lot. The whole reason we're doing this series is because there's a lot of talk out there about a lot of things having to do with beards and brachos and why. Rav Schechter always told us, We have to understand why we do things. We have to understand why. And once you understand why, you understand the application of it. If we never understand the origin of it and the development of the din, you can never prioritize. You can never figure out how to apply it. So the purpose of this is not to give a whole shiur on all the halachas. It's just to understand where some of these practical things are coming from. So one last...
Can I just ask you one question?
Yes.
The woman doesn't have an obligation to say Havdalah, but she has an obligation to hear Havdalah.
So that's,
right?
That would go into this... Same story. Technically speaking, according to this second approach, she wouldn't have an obligation to hear Havdalah. She would have to say Baruch HaMavdil to conclude Shabbos, to end the Kedusha Shabbos, but the strict din derabanan of the Havdalah service, you could call it, then she wouldn't be obligated to hear either. But again, that's a minority opinion that we're going to be choshish for, we're going to be concerned about it, just that why we should listen to the man who's making the Havdalah. But Me'ikar Adin, nobody should be confused. A woman should for sure recite Havdalah, and Rav Avadya says a woman, so nobody should be confused, a woman should recite the full Havdalah with Bar Meroyosh and everything.
And don't people say also, like, if you don't hear Havdalah, like, Shabbos until Tuesday.
So there is a din that you can still make Havdalah till the extension of Shabbos until Tuesday. The Shulchan Aruch has a discussion. If you're going to get wine tomorrow, should you eat tonight or should you not eat tonight? So there's discussion about that, but you don't have to fast until Tuesday. You could say Baruch HaMavdil, you're not going to get wine for another day. So then you say Baruch HaMavdil and you eat. But you can also make Havdalah, like we said, you can make it on beer, you could probably make it on other, like coffee with flavoring, you can make an orange juice. Rav Moshe says you can't make it on soda, but maybe, well, because he wouldn't say pop. He would never say that. He's from Luban. He's from Russia. Why would he say pop? But I think maybe today there's another chashva drink that you would give to somebody. So it's called Chamar Medina. So I assume today you can't find wine, so you make it on Chamar Medina. But it's true. You can't eat before Havdalah, just like you can't eat before Kiddush. Okay, one last point on this, which comes up sometimes. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, which predates FaceTime, but in his time was talking about a telephone. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about listening to Kriyas HaMegillah on the telephone. So Rav Moshe, according to his understanding of the technology, he assumed that the technology was such that the voice was being transmitted from the speaker to the listener. And even though he's not 100% certain about this, he thinks that you can make a bracha and be motzi somebody in Kriyas HaMegillah on the telephone. Rav Shlomo Salomon Orbach has a tshuva in the Minchas Shlomo. He does not agree. He doesn't quote Moshe, but he's not convinced. He actually spends three paragraphs at the beginning of the tshuva talking about the physics of how a microphone works and the effect of the waves and the membrane in the microphone. And I don't know what Rav Shlomo Salomon would say today, because I don't know the technology of FaceTime or digital sounds. But I'm not so sure, you have to ask an audiologist, I'm not so sure that the voice that you're hearing is the voice. It sounds like it's a digital remanufacturing or representation of the voice that you put into it. If that's the case, then it's very hard-pressed to say that you could be Yotze on the telephone and on FaceTime. So this comes up on occasion. You have somebody who's by themselves. So you say, oh, I'll call them, I'll make Havdalah for them on the phone. I don't know about that. The best thing would be to do, if they have the ability, is to go over to the house and make Havdalah for them. And if they can't make Havdalah, you know, if you can't make Havdalah for them in their house, pick up the phone and walk them through it so they should say the bracha on their own, or arrange before Shabbos that somebody should be there. Because it's very questionable. Is it really true that the FaceTime is the actual voice that you could say Amen and Biyotze that bracha? That's highly questionable. So even though Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he thinks you can, I'm not so sure that today with FaceTime or with the digital fiber optics, I would have to do a lot more research to know the actual technology that's being used on FaceTime to say that's, are you actually hearing the voice of the person? The Gemara has a din that if you speak into a pit and you hear the echo of the person, that's not the voice. That you're hearing the echo. That's not the din. You can't hear Tkiya Shofar, for example. If you blow into a pit and somebody's hearing just the echo, so then they're not Yotze. So this comes up on occasion where somebody needs to recite Havdalah and they're in a hospital or something like that. So the best thing is to see if you can arrange that somebody, you know, you can't get there after right after Shabbos, I'm going to go an hour later, no problem. Say Baruch HaMavdal, they won't eat anything. You can't get to the hospital with a, what do you call it? Bring a flashlight with an incandescent bulb. Bring a little light that you plug in, Borim Arioesh, on a clear bulb. You can see the filament. If it's cloudy, if it's frosted, then it's not good. You got to see it. I'm telling you, if you stand on the chair, you can see there's a burning filament in there. That's Mamish Borim Arioesh. They say that Reb Chaim Ozer, he used to make Havdalah Motzoi Shabbos Borim Arioesh on an electric light bulb. In 1920, so the people knew that it's Eish Mamish. So if you're on the road, you need a Havdalah, so just take the incandescent bulb, you say the bracha, and you light it. So I'm not going to summarize everything that we talked about tonight, because it's all on the paper in front of you, and we're already way over time, and I thank you all for coming and listening, and I hope that you learned at least something, one new thing. But the idea that I hope we walk away with is that the concept of Or on Shabbos is so powerful, and that everybody in this room, we are not just satisfied with the fact that we've done it all our life one way. We're mamish looking to make it stronger and deeper and more meaningful. That's what we're going to take into it. And that goes for the Knesset Shabbos and for the Yetzias Shabbos. So whether we did whatever we did last week, it doesn't matter, because every Shabbos is anew. So it's the beginning of the journey, but the idea that we have this ratzon, that we want to find more meaning in our Yiddishkeit, because there is. We just have to search for it. We just have to scratch the surface, and we realize how much depth, how much beauty there is in all the things that we're already doing. This is just the tip of the iceberg. So it should be a zchus for us that we should be able to continue our journey, each one of us individually and collectively as a community, to find more meaning and more connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the things that we're doing every single day. Thank you all for coming. Jenny, thank you for hosting. Next week, who's hosting next week? I think Gina is hosting next week, Amir Tzah Hashem. Monticello.